charge the ion accelerator. It's time to forge the narrative.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. We are the Bell All Souls podcast. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined by Tanya Gates.
Hey, everybody.
Adam Camilleri and Red Powell.
G'day.
Hello.
Oh, the sleeves are off. That was still wintertime over there.
We're going into autumn, but we've got like this, the last like week and a half has been unusually warm for some reason. So it's like about 28 degrees here today.
No idea what that means.
I don't know what that is in freedom units. Yep.
21 degrees is room temperature. I don't know if that helps you out.
We will figure that out later. We have the internet. We have computers in our pockets.
It's 83.
Welcome to the show, everybody. We got some cool stuff to talk about. Painting links. Basically, painting accountability is a subject that we were talking about in the pre-show. And I need a little help, too. I mentioned this before, but I feel like my life is now base swaps on Eldari. Building bases, swapping out bases, and touching up where inevitably a little things go wrong. I do want to share how I'm taking some of these metal bases the metal models with the test tabs and slotted bases into the modern world. Might be worth doing, but it is a bit of a slog. And Tanya, I understand you and your community Discord has been dealing with that recently as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We always sort of complain that we're not getting anything done, but then we're not actually making goals or anything either. So I decided that I was going to run a sort of painting accountability league kind of thing. So basically, I'm going to give the people who want to participate a period of time. They are going to pledge to paint whatever it is. We have one person who's working on a cosplay as well in there as well. And then you're also going to pledge some sort of like, I don't want to say punishment, but kind of. So
what do they call that?
Consequence.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, consequence.
It's incentive. You're incentivizing yourself.
That's right. That's right. So we've got one person really hates beans. So if he doesn't make his pledge, he's going to eat an entire can of baked beans. I hate really bitter beer. I love beer, but I hate IPAs. So I'm going to find like the most bitter IPA that I can find. And I'm going to drink the entire can if I don't make my pledge as well. Somebody's going to do a shot of mustard. So we're all going to come together at the end and we're going to like sort of do a voice sort of chat. And we're all going to, you know, say, did we actually complete what we said we were going to, or did we not? And if we didn't, then in front of everybody, we have to partaketh of our delightfully tasty treats.
I like that. Choose your poison. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. So I have pledged to finish all of my Tempestus Scions infantry, and I'm going to build and paint a Rogal Dorn as well. And then I have a stretch goal. I don't have like any sort of consequence if I don't do that, but if I have time, because I always like to do a stretch goal, I want to finish my Torox Prime as well.
But if you don't finish your Torox Prime, will you count that against you?
I won't. No, because okay, it's a stretch.
Be gentle.
Goal. Yeah. It's the first time, you know. I just always like to have like a little bit more of a push. You know, I feel like finishing the rest of my science because I have about 14 individual models left and then my big tank. I feel like that's really doable in a month and a half for me. So I just like to give myself a little push for a little more.
Now, when you were setting this up, is it everyone working on multiple models or is it some folks is cool just you've just got one model you're trying to get done? Like, was there any, I guess, quantity or size of thing that was a requirement to participate?
No, because it's everybody's own goals, right? And people work at different speeds or whatever. And it is supposed to be fun, yet still kind of challenging. So it's kind of up to everybody else to sort of determine where they're at. We have some new painters as well who don't paint as fast. We've got experienced painters who slap chop really fast, who are pledging more as well. And like I said, we have somebody who's doing a cosplay. So there's room for all sorts of hobbies, even within this sort of format. I'm really excited to see what everybody comes up with.
I like that though, is that basically people can be their own judge, you know, their own standard of what it is they want to be motivated to do and set their, have their win be something they've decided. Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I think like there's enough pressure from outside sources in the world already. And I think sometimes we are our own worst critics as well. So, I mean, really, people can take care of their own goals and consequences as well.
This part of this hobby, you know, the build, paint, and play, you know, each one of those requires sometimes some motivation. And if you just wait for that inspiration to strike you, it may never come. So, you know, whatever it kind of takes, I think, is, especially in this, like, a constructive way, where, you know, I know they're going to take it seriously because they want to finish, but it, like, the self-imposed consequences still seem, you know, in the spirit of a good time.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Dan.
I was going to say, the your own critic thing, man, I fight that all the time. I've got like 200 painted Cadian Guardsmen, and there was about 20 I did while super sleepy studying at college, and did not scrape the mold lines well, did not do the a nice opaque base coat for one of the colors, and man, those guys are in the bottom, like, dungeon of my hobby room.
They're the first to fix bayonets. They're
Dude, I've got 200. I don't even need those guys to fix bayonets. Like, they don't even see the gaming table. And of course, it's 10 guardsmen when I've sorry, 20 guardsmen when I've got 200. So what am I going to strip and repaint them? No, I just painted 20 more guardsmen and moved on with my life.
Yeah, and I just, for me, I am really motivated by events as well. And where I live, we don't actually have that many events. So I needed to find some other form of motivation in order to get painting, because I don't really want to chase the meta anymore. So I just want to, like, continuously sort of work on more and more pieces that I've got in my pile of shame and sort of amass this huge collection so that I don't have to be constantly stress painting for events. Like, maybe I'll only paint one extra thing instead of, like, three things in a month, you know?
Well, I mean, if you're dedicated to a faction, though, that's, I mean, still, like, when you have some spare, I don't say spare time, like, it's, you know, whatever. But when you sit down, like, I really like to paint something. If you just have a squad that you just paint because you want to, you will get to use it eventually whenever you want. It's done. Like, once it's done, it's done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I went through and I inventoried all my stuff, and I have over like 8,200 points of guard, and I think only half of it is painted. So this is a problem that I really need to work on.
4,100 points of guard.
you told us about that a few weeks ago
with your, like, you've got them all, like, taxonomied out or whatever by.
Yeah.
Okay, that's.
Yeah, which is actually kind of nice, because it's not, I don't have to think about what I'm going to paint a new unit, right? I've got them all sort of separated out into their little, like, organizations, and each one has its own sort of color and heraldry and stuff like that. So I don't have to think about that aspect of.
I know in years past we have talked about accountability partners and things like that, but I think it really does sometimes help in things like that. You know, for whatever it is that helps you manufacture that motivation, whether it's posting pictures online to, you know, just whatever the wide world web. I know I didn't say that right, but you know. You know, or to one person, like, hey, how's it going? I know I competed, and I use the air quotes, to paint some Gretchen against another guy who was painting the same amount of Gretchen, like, who could finish first, you know, of those things. Like, it, whatever it takes, and then post pictures so you can see each other's progress and kind of stir you on. But that's really cool to have, you know, that little bit of extra momentum an incentive to do some of this stuff, because, like, this world is competing, like, all over the place for our attention and our time and our efforts and our dollars. And sometimes you don't always get to spend those things with stuff that you love because you feel like you're getting pulled somewhere else. And I feel like anything that helps bring you back into that moment of joy is a good thing, even if it's under the guise of a competition, you know, or someone, you know, helping you ride you to get to the end. It's like your own trainer, you know, kind of thing. It's like the Rocky. He's like, go, you know.
Yeah. I think too, sometimes, you know, there's people who just really don't enjoy the hobby aspect as much as other people. And when they have goals Like, of course, they're still going to paint their stuff, but maybe it's like a bit of a slog. And maybe knowing that you're sort of in it with other people who are kind of like struggling in the same way as you, maybe that gives you a little bit of comfort as well. I know that there's a couple people in this painting league who kind of look at the hobby like a necessary evil. So hopefully they feel a little less alone in this journey.
You mentioned, you know, chasing the meta. I think most of us have been there. Maybe people that are listening in there is like, you know, I'll pick a unit. Centurions are real hot right now. I guess I need 9. You know, there's, you know, like, well, I only had 3 because I really like the unit, you know, and now we've got, you know, 6 more to paint, you know, our models within models or whatever. I think we've been there, but, you know, finding ways to spark it, to get it done that's a cool idea.
Mm-hmm. And I've been doing it in chunks of 500 points because I find in 500 points I can get like a couple vehicles or a big vehicle or a character and like an infantry squad. Like I can get a variety of things in 500 points. So for me, that's been really good. Like 400 to 500 points at a time. And then I don't know what it is, but putting that much like finished painted stuff on the shelf all at once feels really, really good to me. Super satisfaction.
In the FTN Discord, you post a picture of your shelf, and I'm working on my shelf. For me, not to segue us for a second, but like I'm starting to like it's starting to not like sit right with me that my finished stuff is next to my unfinished stuff, and I want to put those in like opposite corners. So I started working on a shelf that you can, you know, kind of display, kind of just alternate storage and stuff, just so it's there to see, and I can walk by, go, you know, I've done this stuff. I'm proud of this stuff. And adding more to it is, you know, when you're like, there's a blank spot right there. Now I can fill this blank spot with another painted unit.
Yeah, I do have a few like sort of spots left. I used to have 2 shelves of guard, but now I'm going back and I'm like revisiting some of my older paint jobs to sort of bring them back up to my new standard. And so now I only have 1 shelf of like actual finished painted guard stuff. And so I do have 1 shelf that's quite barren kind of at the bottom, but for the most part, it is all painted and it looks so nice altogether.
You hear that, Adam? She's bringing her older models up to the modern standard and not relegating them to the bottom shelf.
Well, aren't you spent?
I am not hobby shaming.
That's
awesome.
That's good. Look, if I go back to the guard, 100%, like I would want to do that as well. But yeah, moved on. Greener pastures, playing knights now, baby.
No, speaking of the events and motivation is that is one of the things I do. Like I'll get a unit up to like maybe 80-90%. And then when it's time to go to an event, I'm like, you know what? That unit needs some squad markings. Or they need some transfers or something. Let me spend the night before doing 1 detail on these 10 models. And it doesn't feel as oppressive when you're trying to get 1,000 points, 500 points or whatever. You're just doing something that is truly ornamental and, you know, something that 3 feet away pop, you know, kind of thing, you know, is a little bit of motive.
I like to do absolutely nothing the night before an event. That's my motivation for painting now.
Yeah. Fair enough. Whatever it takes. Chaos Knights, though.
Yeah. Some of my most favoritest of models. I mean, say what you will about the rules, but the Abominant.
Looks so Abominant. Good.
Oh, really good. Spike tail, big wispy, whippy claw, terror shades.
Back hinged knees are freaking stupendous. Like all the Chaos Knight models, and they came out, like, because I've always been a knight enjoyer. But man, when the Imperial Knights came out, I was like, ooh, these are huge and majestic and awesome. And then the Chaos Knights came out, I'm like, Imperial Knights, look at these plain Janes. Look at these guys. Ain't got any freaking spikes. You got nothing.
Buzzards.
Yeah, you're rocking up to the you know, the formal, the ball in your pajamas. What's going on? Like, you just where's your grandeur? They're amazing. I love the duality of the two like kits next to each other, where the from a painting point of view, the flat panels of the Imperial Knights allow a lot more for iconography and characterization and like house, you know, all that stuff, whereas the Chaos Knights are just messier. You can do the same stuff, but by default, and by the way the model's built, it can't be clean. It cannot be clean and like neat. And I love that. I love that they built that into the philosophy of the miniatures.
You at one point were saying that you were working on custom bases for your knights.
I am. Yeah. So I'm at an absolute deficit of time. And I've always wanted two knight armies. I've always wanted a pure knight and a chaos knight army. And I've just, it's just been one of those things where I've had the models. Like, I've had the models for like 5 to 6 years. I've had the miniatures and I've built one. And it's just, you know those times, you know those ones?
One base, like, or one knight?
One knight. You know those projects you have that you love and you're desperate you want to do, but you just never seem to break ground on it? So I hand passed to a lovely mate of mine who's a burgeoning commission painter who needed the work, and I said, you know, here's this full army. I want to do the bases, but you can do everything else. I built everything, magnetized everything, had everything built to exactly what I wanted. Gave it to him in the hopes that, you know, I said I'm not going to jib you on the price. No mates rates. I'll pay you exactly what it's worth, because I know commission painting is a very long, arduous, and at times not very good dollar per hour price point. So I told him to paint literally the best thing you possibly can, because what I want people to do is, because he's a mate of mine, to come up and go like, oh my God, that's amazingly painted. And I say, yeah, it is, my mate such and such painted it, you know, yada, yada, yada. And yeah, he's doing a stupendous job. It's House Orlac. I think I've said it before if anyone wants to look it up. What's
that color scheme?
It's actually really weird. It's purple, gold, and sable. So it's actually like two
warm
tones. No, it's a maroony brown. But of course, we've done a lot of marbling, black marbling, and nice burnished yellow gold. It's looking stupendous. We also went and got some custom decals made for the the night house. So we're going all the way in, and he's been working with me amazingly, and it's been really rewarding. But yeah, I want the bases, because I've got the Chaos Knight side and the Pure Knight side, and it's the same house, but they're the house that was the most closely aligned to the Dark Angels during the Great Crusade. And so I love the headcanon being that just like half the Dark Angels went fallen, half this house did as well. So I want the light and dark reflections of each other. And so I want the bases to match on both armies.
I took a little easier way out on that.
I got to tell you, the thing I'm the jazzed about the most is that just in a random trade, like a buy, swap, and sell, I was dropping off some bits and picking up some bits, and I saw just the random carapace of a legit Forge World Porphyrion. I don't know where the rest of the model went.
Yeah?
It's a giant freaking model. It's like bulldog-looking Forge World.
They probably had an unfortunate accident, and you were dealing with what saved it.
A maniac. Where's the rest of the knight? But anyway, I bought that, and now I've built my Lancer, who's the head of the... who's the lord of the Night House, is... like resting his foot on the top carapace of a Knight Porphyrion. Like, that's on his base. That's his, yeah. And I tried so hard to get it so his lance was going through the carapace, because I carved out a huge notch and hole right through where the pilot sits, and I wanted the lance going straight through it. Couldn't do it. Couldn't figure out how to make because the arm joints, they just wouldn't move in front of the model. I could get them up, down, out, in, but I couldn't get the arm joint in front and down. In addition, once I did, when I got it close enough, it blocked so much of the miniature. Like, the whole front of the model was blocked by the lance. And I was like, I'm taking away more than I'm adding by doing this, I think.
That self-edit is strong. That's actually...
it is.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, because the lance is a topic on self-editing.
Yes.
I mean, because the lance what we talk about is models.
Yeah, legitimately, the lance on the Lancer is almost as tall as the Lancer. And so when you have that thing going in and then all the way up, the whole, like, face, I would have to completely change the oscillation of the face and then the torso, and then I'd have to readjust the arm again. I was like, nah, stop it, cool. He's just got his foot on it. Cool, we're done.
It's like a giant tactical rock.
Which? My goodness. I like you brought up the decals. So the decals, like, there a lot of people feel a lot of different ways about those. I think, like, it's a real cool thing to do if you think it's appropriate. Like, they're not that hard to apply. They make a big difference. If you're worried about the way they look versus, you know, whether we look on the model, like the sheen on the model, there's ways to fix that. They actually take paint. You could paint over them. If you use them as like a stencil, if you even wanted to, like there's a bunch of different ways to make them blend into your model in a way that's more pleasing to you. And there are some amazing ones out there.
Absolutely. There are some great people who are making ones that are stupendous. I have yet to see, and I mean, this is no shame. I've yet to see someone making ones as good as the Forge World, like Legion ones, but that is like a $1 billion company with a $1 billion company's resources versus old mate with his printer and his
there
shed.
Are ways to print enough. Your own too. I mean, like custom, like if you were a designer to design
get
your
the
own,
right, yeah, it's, you get it's the right not. Paper, you get the yeah. right covering, all that stuff. Yeah, it can be done. And yeah, decals just add such. Like so much, and I cannot be bothered 99.8% of the time.
you're just talking about how you didn't have any time, right, to build this. So are you really going to print all that stuff at home? Have you ever tried to deal with a printer at home? They never work.
Yeah,
I do.
Used to have terrible printer luck. Had to change ink cartridge. Always new printer.
Yeah. My partner and I went out and we bought a $300 printer. Which supposedly was a great printer. We looked up all the reviews and stuff like that. It has worked once. In 2 years of owning it, it has worked once.
Oh. But look, this is part of what this conversation is about. It's about, you know, trying to find ways to prioritize the whatever aspect you consider the chore. Mm. You know, and I think Tanya, what you were talking about in the beginning is a way to add that bit of social aspect to it, that bit of, you know, friendly rivalry / competition / motivation into it. And that all helps. As long as you want to do it. Again, this is not about the meta chasing where you have to paint to compete to live, you know, or whatever. I mean, if you want to do this part of it, then even on your best days, you might still struggle to find the inspiration and that oomph, that lift to do it. But what you're describing is a way to help alleviate that, one way to do it. Until that doesn't work anymore, then you find a different way.
Yeah. I think that with any goal, though, you just got to make sure that you don't set yourself up for failure. So you got to make sure it's a smart goal. You know, I have seen and heard of people pledging far too much, far too little time. So, you know, you want to make sure that it is a bit of a challenge when you set this goal, but not an unachievable challenge.
Be kind to yourself.
That's right. Well, push yourself.
I just think, like, as far as communities go, it's a great way to build the community. It's a great way for the community to engage, to follow up with one another. And having, you know, Tanya, like you mentioned, like the ability to see 500 points being built at a time and for the community to be able to share in that, I think it's really important. I think that whether it's a community that's just started or a community that's been running for a while, things like that, the little ways to engage with one another outside of just playing, because there is a lot more to it than just games, I think it's pretty crucial. I'd say it's vital.
And it is a way to be a Warhammer fan. We're not even talking about always having to play games either. Like, this is just a good thing to do if you enjoy the model aspect of it. Let's take a quick break. Thanks for that topic. That sounds awesome. Let us know how it goes. Keep us posted on everyone's progress. Who had to shoot the mustard and eat the beans? And we'll take a quick break. Come back in just a second, everybody. See y'all.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Thank you very much for checking out our sponsors. Please do. They really help support the show, keep the show free for everybody, keep everything running behind the scenes, and just absolutely delightful people to work with. So check out Discount Games. And I know the message says, you know, message Jay about stuff to, you know, basically get your pre-orders in, do more on the hobby. Do that. It's serious. And a lot of cool stuff is coming out. There's been, I think, about all the stuff for Horus Heresy, the Emperor's Children stuff. Like, this is stuff that has existed, you know, in our brains, and it's finally get it in physical in your hands.
In addition, Red was pretty hyped in the green room about the new Soul Blights release as well.
Which
I gotta say, Soulblight Gravelords is the models. Wow.
The story behind them too, like, it's so compelling.
Oh yeah. Well, and we've talked about just how good looking Age of Sigmar is in general, and really, I think this stuff that they've come out with for Soulblight Gravelords is just the continuation of that trend, and that they really. I mean, I liked where they were already going. You know, we saw kind of the re-up or the renewed version of zombies and whatnot from the Cursed City set, and then how it's picked up now. And now we've got the renewed Graveguard equivalent, right? This Bone Rattle kind of deal that they're going with. Mm-hmm. And the new, even then, the rest of the stuff that I don't think it's available yet. Like right now, it's just the box set that is coming out this coming, or, you know, at the time you're listening to this, I think it's just been released. But the rest of the stuff, they've got like a new kind of Terrorgeist zombie dragon thing that was shown on Warcom and whatnot. That looks amazing. The new vampire on a steed looks amazing. I mean, it's just really good looking stuff that I'm it's tempting. Like I said, or Adam, you mentioned the green room. I have a whole old world undead army and I don't want to change that over. And so it feels like to do this, I would just need to start a new army and it would all be that. You know, I've got plenty of Cursed City stuff I could run with, but that stuff is, there's nothing like it. I can't say that I've seen anything out there. That zombie dragon, it's just something else. It's that good.
Blood Knights are cool. You know, all the werewolf stuff is cool. Like, I'm sorry, I'm an enabler right now.
We didn't really talk about it, but that Cathay preview that they did at Adepticon, like, I have never wanted to play Old World because rank and flank doesn't really feel like my thing, but I was like, maybe? That stuff is all beautiful.
When you pull a side charge with a Chaos Lord, just feels right.
So it's taking every fiber of my being not to start Old World with Cathay and also to not start a Tyranid army. Those are like my two big sort of challenges right now, is like not buy those because I really want to focus on what I have right now, but it's tough.
The common consensus from the what we saw at Adepticon after the like the shell shock of the preview was those Cathay models. I want them.
Yeah.
How on earth am I supposed to paint them? You know, they look that good. You know, like sometimes you feel like the studio is doing you a favor by pulling a couple of punches or whatever. They pulled no punches.
No, they did not do me any favors. When I saw that big hot air balloon thing, I was like, oh, I need that.
I feel like I need that for like the Eldari displays. Like, I feel like that, how cool does that thing look? You know, like,
it's so cool.
So, yeah, anyway. In this segment, I want to talk about getting ready for some tournaments. By the way, if typically I'm a lot more like relaxed and chill with this show, you know, over here, you know, chewing the fat. But if I'm dressed in one of these collared shirts, that means we just recorded the Warhammer Meta Chasers. And so where are we?
And if I'm dressed in one of these shirts.
But if you're curious about what the meta of is happening out there and some of the largest events in the world that are going on, and what people are taking and, you know, the trends from week to week, you can go ahead and check out, it's myself, Adam Camilleri, and a guy named Dustin Henshaw who do the Warhammer Meta Chaser. And we talk about those events and the trends and what people are taking. And it also helps us as we prepare, because we're players as well. You know, and it also may help you when we talk about specific regions that you might be from.
Well, in addition to that, it also helps us a lot during the commentary portion of our other year. So it all feeds into each other, baby. It's all an Ouroboros.
These are the two hardest working fellas in competitive Warhammer, that's for sure.
I'd like to talk about Warhammer a lot. But we also, at the end of that show, the Meta Chasers, we do something very silly, and I don't want to spoil it, but sometimes it does not have anything to do with Warhammer, but right now we're ranking the best movies of all time in their various categories, and there
respective
are some
genres.
Hot takes. Some devastating.
Two princess movies went up against each other, and my heart was broken. Shattered. Destroyed.
But coming up soon, going to be competing in the ATC. This is a tournament that has been in place for years now, over a decade now, I think. This basically vanguards of team tournament play in the States takes place in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and put on by, not, of course, a lot of people, but spearheaded by a couple of just some of the best folks you're ever going to encounter in this hobby. And, you know, this year they're doing 8-player tournaments and 5-player tournaments at the same time. They did the same thing last year. We're going to be competing in the 8-player tournament, which is decided it's different than a 5-player tournament. I mean, 8 versus 5, but how you construct your lists and your factions you take is a little bit different, I believe. Feel free to, you know, anybody challenge me on that if you'd like. But now we're trying to figure out what to take. What is it looking like? What are the best things out there? We know Eldari are strong. We know Aspect Host and the Devoted of Ennead are strong. But there are a lot of lists out there holding that down. And there are three or four types of lists that can be taken there and hold that down. So you might go on the bad ride with what might be arguably one of the best lists in the format, in this team format, because the players have agency in how you pair and what you pair into each and every round of the tournament. It's a long way of saying it's difficult. It's difficult to figure out what to take.
Well, I'm really interested to hear about what the difference are between 8 and 5 man teams, because I've only ever done 5 and it's looking like I'm probably going to end up doing an 8. So what are like the main differences?
So the main difference is the pairings process and also the depth of the faction pool available. When you're playing in some people say 4 to 5 player teams, you can pretty much more than half your team can be kind of taken up by singles-esque lists.
The best singles list can be your 5.
Yeah.
Some large portion of your 5-man roster.
Yeah, correct. And if not, you can just do your whole roster as singles players, as far as singles style lists. When you get into 8, you have to compromise. You have to compromise on what you're taking, because a lot of the time, that we know what the stratosphere, the meta has always been. There's very few times where there's 8 equally strong factions in the game. In addition to that, getting 8 players with faction proficiency on different things is also quite hard, because a lot of the time you'll have players who cross over. Like, there's a bunch of players. I'm going to an 8-player team event this weekend. Sorry, not this weekend, next weekend. We had like 3 players who could have played Adeptus Astartes. And so we gave Adeptus Astartes to the guy who couldn't play other things as well, who like he's mostly just played Adeptus Astartes. He's playing the Adeptus Astartes, and the other 2 of us, we had to switch on to other things, despite us earning our way onto that team by playing that faction in different modes. And so you have to start making compromises in your team makeup, and then the pairings process kicks in. And because when you're pairing for 5 players, essentially, you know, one team will put up a player and then you'll match 2 in, and then one team will put up a player and you'll match 2 in, and then everything else is kind of just falls into place. So it's really just a front-loaded system, whereas in a 8-player teams, it goes way deeper and gets way more nuanced, just because every additional player you add after 5 is also is additionally a multiplier.
Unlike the third to get the picked brains. List is paired against the last.
This one and that one. Yeah. In this mission, are you still as good as you said on this stuff and that one and stuff? No. You need table pick to get that score. So we have to use you in this slot in order to draw that army out, so that our guy in the back end can get into this one and we can get a big win. And it just gets a lot more complicated and deep. And look, it's a thesaurus. It's an encyclopedia of 8-player teams, and it's a reason it's the international standard, because it's the most deep you can make the process and the most nuanced you can make, and which skill-based, I guess, you can make it, where you try and outmaneuver your opponent to your advantage, as in pairings person versus pairing person representing their respective teams, without it being insanely convoluted and taking 3 hours if we went to like 10 players.
I also think that, you know, back to that list comment, list choices, is that some of these power lists as we know them out there right now use 2 factions.
To
pull from, and where you can only represent 1 faction per player. Oh, sorry, you can only use 1 faction once per team. I was going to say that wrong. So the power list that uses 2 factions might dilute your overall power of your team, because that faction is no longer available for another player to use on the team.
Or the opposite. So theoretically, you have a very strong Chaos Space Marines player, very strong Demons player. But the best way to play Demons is to play Shadow Legion, which uses both of those factions. What do? Do you make one of your guys jump off and play something that they're not familiar with in order to make the best possible thing you can do with one player? Or do you let them both play what they're good at? And I got to tell you, you let them both play what you're good at 9 times out of 10. Unless that is like, that faction is so much better and literally the best possible like army in the game, then maybe you do it. But 9 times out of 10, you don't. You back your players to play what they're good at. But in 5 players, there's much less ability to dodge problem matchups than there are in 8-player teams. And so in 8-player teams, you can have more nuanced faction specialists. Like, Australia's like known for it. We're known for faction specialists because it's you know, quite expensive to chase the meta in Australia. So a lot of the times you'll have people who just play their 1 or 2 armies. And because of that, they're absolute juggernauts on those one or two armies. But those one or two armies, you know, in any calendar year might be the best, worst, or otherwise army in the game. And so you'll find people, you know, in Australia, New Zealand's another great example of it, who are just like doing things with armies that you wouldn't otherwise have thought they could do. Skari's a great example of this, Ridwin Martinez. Would you ever, like in a five-player team, there's a lot more reason to ask him to play something else than there is in an eight-player team. Even though you still probably don't, because he's the best Yukari player in the freaking world, you still probably just be like, yo, you do whatever you want, buddy.
How many Void Ravens do you need? No
yeah,
problem.
So Bobby, you got any more Void Ravens? Bring them in. Truckloads, okay. But if you have that kind of player, in a five-player team, you're much more likely to ask them to be like, well, can you make it so you have a more even performance rather, you know, into all different armies rather than having a big win, small win, big win, big loss, big win, big loss, which is what you can find if you take a faction specialist who can't really dodge the things that can just like straight line run through you without you having much say about it. In eight players, those guys get so much more agency to dodge the problems for their respective matchups. As a case in point, last year, Team Poland, who's in at the WTC level, is the most successful nation on the international scale. They took Adeptus Mechanicus because they had a specialist player who could do things with Adeptus Mechanicus a lot of people didn't know or didn't see coming. And I guess the concept we have for that now is Bird Jail, where they take in excess of 30 Taraxi models, and they just kind of, you can't leave your deployment zone because it's like, this one deep strike shoots and moves, and that's after turn one, scouting, moving, blocking you in. Because they had a faction specialist that was able to do something niche and X factor that other people, players couldn't replicate. No one knew what to expect. And so that guy ran roughshod over people with just playing, you know, bog standard ADMEC infantry, which, you know, and you can do things a lot more successfully and flourish more and have much more of an identity in eight player teams. Even though I do think in five player teams, you still get it a lot. Eight players, like I said, it magnifies it to another level.
And you still see some lists that can take advantage of things that wouldn't work in a singles list or singles tournament. You couldn't battle nine rounds undefeated with potentially a gimmick list, but with you do have a little bit of agency of pairing of table picks and faction, you know, who you play against. You might be able to really arrange some nice.
Well, no one goes into a singles event with the intention to lose by 1 point. Nobody signs up, pays their money, submits their list being like, man, I'm going to lose by 1.5 out of 5 games. Oh, yeah. But in teams, that guy is your ace in the hole because that's as good as it gets. If you can – so, like, I mean, a lot of people are doing it with Awakened Dynasty Necrons. A lot of people are doing it with a lot of these durable upon multiple facets kind of style lists. These lists that just don't – nobody can bully. Nobody can roll through or push over and can easily beat them. Like, there's very few things that can easily beat them. And so those are the lists that you want, and you need people on them with nerves of steel who can just be like, I don't care what I play, I'm getting points. And as if you could convince one of your – what Tanya did, what Red does, most important players on every team. Everyone knows the guy playing Eldari, Astra Militarum, you know, Savage Custodes is going to go and beat somebody's brakes off and get a 15 or a big win. But if you're two, like if you're playing five players teams, if you're two superstars on the best armies in the game, go and get big wins. But two of your players give up big wins. Well, you've net gained nothing. You've net gained absolutely nothing. And so it's the fact that you need to get big wins while not giving up big wins. And because you have a pairings process where you get to maneuver your strong lists into things that they're good into, when your opponent does that to you, because they also have as much agency as you do to make these things occur, you have to have the stauncher people with the stronger backbones and the rods of iron up their spine.
Sometimes,
like, you're not pushing me in and you're not going to get a big win.
You need a player who can deal with close games, you know, or one that is fine to lose 9 games in a row. 8 games in a row or whatever, but they're going to try to get those points that we're talking about. So they go up against what might be a titanic list, you know, just a list that's known for knocking it out of the park, but they hold them to fewer points than they would have gotten against another player or another list.
Case in point, the United States of America in 2018 won the WTC. They won the International World Championship of 40K. One of the best players in the world, Andrew Gagneau, who, you know, has won Nova at both the Invitational and the GT multiple times back to back. This guy's an absolute monster. He went to that WTC he went and ate dirt 6 rounds in a row. Like, he got dumpstered. And the thing is, in when you're playing 8v8 at that level, you have to assume somebody's going to have to eat dirt. You can't, if you think that you can play 8v8 with their guy, with their pairings having agency, you're having agency, and it's all just going to go your way, you're a lunatic. It's never going to happen. Never going to happen. Somebody's going to have to cop it. And when you can just turn to one of the best players in the world and be like, enjoy the bus ride, buddy. You're under it. Like, checks watch for 14 hours today. You're under the bus. Because these are four-hour rounds at this event. It's 3 4-hour rounds that happen. So it's minimum 12 hours. And and that guy, more than people out there, you know, the big players going and getting maximum wins, that guy was more of a reason that they won than the guys getting the big wins that year.
So that takes us to the ATC, July 11th to the 13th. They're doing a 5-player team tournament, an 8-player team tournament. And there's also a kill team tournament there. It's in a great hall in Chattanooga. It's actually downtown in the Marriott Convention Center, but within walking distance of some cool restaurants, some cool little cultural areas in the vicinity. And now Red and I are going to be on a team, and we got to figure out what we're going to take. Yeah.
Well, I know what I'm taking. Ain't nobody going to take that away from me, Paul. No worries there. Playing agents, baby.
Yeah, I feel like you're a strong contender for that X Factor agents. You've been doing really well throughout the year. But I also think that's a list that actually really does do well in the team environment for everything that we've just described.
I totally right. agree.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I not only because I'm sitting here just, you know, pumped to be doing it myself, but also because it fits a lot of those things, Adam, you're talking about, where it's this thing that can just absorb a lot, right? And it in a lot of play and some of the other events I've been to, I'm really okay just being thrown at whatever. There are definitely some weaknesses to it, but at the same time, it's really hard to move all that battle line power armor that doesn't, you know, it's not Space Marines, but it's power armor, yeah. And it's enough.
In addition, very few people who play this game can put their hand on their heart and tell you definitively what Imperial Agents does.
Seems reasonable. Seems there. Whatever. Cool. You know. Plus this. Plus that. Yeah. Whatever.
They're not going to be able to say to their team, "This is definitively how I expect this game to go." And so, when you create that uncertainty, and you wield an army that is ostensibly by default X factor because it's very low representation, and then you play in a defensive manner, like you really get a lot of agency. You really get a lot of ability to dictate the game.
The same way as the AdMech, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect example.
It's like there's some tricks in there. You just you don't have the reps against. And in a tournament like this, you know, this is maybe your only time you're not going to face it in the round before. It's going to be a brand new experience for you. And that has some power in it, that concept.
For sure.
As far as like, you know, I've got some options as well. I think strong contenders are, of course, Blood Angels. Had to get that in.
Bingo.
Astra Militarum and Eldari, you know. So it's going to come down to the other players of the team and then what they feel strongest about and what we've got in certain positions, you know, of expectations about what they can do. Also, what do y'all think about like 8 of the same archetype across 8 different factions? Like,
I mean,
we are the ones that just rush forward, or is all shooting, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's a valid approach. I think that people, you see, I mean, and y'all, I know you've talked about it before, but, you know, team approach and like strategies as far as what you're going to do, and then to just be invalidated. Like, we've talked about skewed lists before, but to have an entirely skewed team is a whole other kind of approach at a different level of it. And I think that it's to the same point of like how you hedge your bets with what's going to score what and what's going to save points where. Well, not everybody's going to be prepared to deal with a full-on rush skew if that, you know, in that kind of case. And so I like it. I'm a fan.
Deal with 80 assault marines, you know, 3 times, you know, and then.
Yeah.
Well, the concept of a skewed list, right? So we talk about a combined arms approach, and usually that's, if we had to say, that's a center line list where it's got a little bit of everything.
Some long range shooting, you know, let's say a knight's list. You've got a couple of the autocannon knights in the back. You've got a couple of war dogs in the front, and you've got some autocannon or the Gatling cannons. So that's your center line.
That's how I like to play, is just like a Swiss Army knife of a little of this and a little of that. Maybe that's why I usually am the person who has to eat the bad matchups. in team tournaments. I don't know, but that's how I like to play.
It's very interesting that, you know, if you wanted to think about your most combined arms detachment available to your faction, most likely it's your index detachment, it's your Gladius Task Force, your invasion, it's your, you know, yada, yada, yada. And so, I mean, and Gladius is a perfect example because you're very likely to have like a unit of Blade Guard, some jump back intercessors. You're very likely to have some long range fire support, be that Gladiator, Storm Speeder, Repulsor. You're very likely to have a Transporter 2 in an Impulsor or a Rhino, whatever you've got. And you're going to have some, you know, be it intercessors or assault intercessors. You're going to have some scouts. You're going to have like kind of everything up and down the spectrum. A skewed list is going deep into any one portion of those. And you can go into multiple at the same time. I know there's, you know, some VOTAN lists that in a couple of weeks or, probably 6 months ago, we're playing, I am just transports and Terminators. Like I'm Hearthguard and I'm tanks. And so essentially it's bringing the same issue. Custodes always brings this issue by default as being like above average toughness and durability to kill. Even if you do bring tanks and like, you know, Caladius Grav tanks and like, you know, just any old infantry, you're going to bring that skew. That's inherent to their book. Same as Knights, it's inherent to them and Grey Knights as well. They're inherently 2-up save. And so pushing that skew is effort. But then you can go a little bit deeper. And, you know, Creations of Bile is doing it at the moment. We have Awakened Dynasty Necrons doing it at the moment. We have Demons doing it at the moment. We have lots of others that are just pushing this, like, durability by numbers, via wound count. And that can be wound count in big beasties, like multiple Great Unclean Ones, or it can be wound count in that I have 20... Necron warriors who are minus one to hit with a 4-up invulnerable save that are gonna I can get like 3/4 of the unit back in one turn, and that's its own level of durability. Or it can be freaking Gene Stealer Colts who are just gonna recur 20 guys.
How about a whole unit?
They're gonna put back in reserve. Yeah, exactly. Whole fresh units respawning into reserve, and those things are all. So if I had to say one thing, those skews are the evergreens in every edition of the game I've ever. There's always been some kind of that skew that has worked more often than not. And in the way that missions are played at the moment, that's the skew that results in the most points per game. It might not all result in winning, but you'll have the highest floor, you know, of this is my average score per game. Just by always having the ability to score every card off the top of the table, off the top of the board, and having the most consistent primary game of all time, where you can reach out with huge OC dump units and flip your opponents, or hunker down with, you know, 60 OC with a unit of warriors on an objective and just be like, you got to kill all of them, all of them. And these two crypto thralls and the two characters are joined as well. You know, and so yeah, there's a lot of, and those skews you'll find, and everyone that I listed, you'll find a home for them in a team's lineup, because you can hunt them and lean them away from the things that they're like anathema to, that are things that just counter them out of dint of existing. Like Eldari are finding quite a few counters out there. We've found quite a few counters out there. And Paul reeled off one a second ago. Chaos Knights is very strong into Eldari because there's only 3 to 4 units in the Eldari armies that are usually getting taken that will one activation kill a Wardog. Dark Reapers, Yin Khan, it's about it. Oh, sorry, not Dark Reapers, Fire Dragons, Yin Khan, it's about it. Dark Reapers won't do it. They're going to win on fives. Because of that, if you just have 13 Wardogs and run at them, they're going to have the chance, the opportunity to kill 4 of them before 9 of them blitzkrieg straight through your army. Or the alternative happens, they just sit there on 3 out of 5 objectives and pop you with 13 Havoc Lords, which, whilst being indirect fire, are still D6+1 into a unit of 5 Eldari miniatures. So it's going to be an average of about 4-ish shots that are going to hit on 4s, wound on 3s. And you got 13 of those.
Yeah, you just burn down squad at a time. It's like, hey.
You just start picking them off. Just start picking them off. Well, the thing is, right, if there's a unit of 5 Fire Dragons on the board and you kill 2 of them, does 3 Fire Dragons kill a Wardog? Nope. Likelihood not, especially not in if they're not in melter range, they don't have a chance.
Yeah, there's so a that's what you do. Save, like, there's variants of the die roll, you know, it's all.
Exactly. So that's what you do. You're like, oh, I'm going to kill two of your Dark Reapers, 2 of your Fire Dragons. I'm gonna take off a couple of your Storm Guardians, so that the thing that you and your army has the most objective control that you could use to flip my OC8 control is diminished and can no longer do that. And also, if it comes out and it's within 12 inches and below starting strength, you have to test Battle Shock because of your army rule. You're trying to make your army rule matter as well by just popping them all with the Havoc launchers. And so there's the counterplay. If you know everyone in your 8-player teams, and because they're going to be taking 8 lists and 8 factions, very likely Eldari is going to be one of them.
Well,
you want to think, you want to think about taking
that's part of what I'm thinking. This is in theory. This is like, this is, we have a couple of months to try to figure this out. There could be many shifts. Who knows, you know, with what's going to happen. We don't even know what Emperor's Children are going to do in the meta yet, things like that. But I'm Eldari in the, what's that? You know,
I can tell you what they're going to do.
Yeah. Eldari in a team format might be cold product.
I think the way that they're doing it, I think the Eldari list people are using. So there, it's, I can never, I with the depth of that faction,
yeah,
and how many playable.
Sorry. Okay. Let me, okay. Aspect host and, devoted of Yniad are,
Yniad, yeah,
potentially liabilities in a team tournament.
Yeah. If you're playing eight player teams, like I said, I'm playing eight player teams on the weekend. Sorry, not this weekend, next weekend. And we've brought like four factions that can really go after and hunt down Eldari. Yunari in particular. We've all tailored into Yunari.
Yeah, that means it's an effortless put up.
Well, that means they can never attack. They can never be like, okay, we'd like to pair our Yunari, and we're like and we just give them two awful options. So instead they have to do it in reverse, and they have to use it to try
the cleanup.
Yeah, exactly. So what was I saying? Some
sorry,
stuff.
Yeah, jump yeah.
I'm sure it was insightful. Don't worry, guys. It was great.
You were talking about going to a team tournament this
week. Yes. Yeah, I'm playing Grey Knights.
Oh.
Yeah, that's spicy. Look, they got tricks. Grey Knights.
They got tricks, and I'm one of the factions that I believe I have a decent game.
Using the Gravis detachment?
Yeah, Warbane Task Force. Even though they took some changes and you can no longer have the indirect fire from the Purgation squads, I was already leaning away from the Purgation squads. Like, I was already about 12 games in before that change came in. Mm-hmm. And the Purgation squads I found to be very hit and miss. They're a good deterrent, like intimidating thing to have on the table. But I found that damage output was so swingy. 12 shots hitting on fours, re-rolling. So, you know, 80-ish hits, give or take. And then strength 8, minus 1, 2 damage. So into Custodes. Don't even bother shooting them. You're playing into Marines. Maybe you kill 5 scouts, you know, with all of the shots. That's all the shots. Because you're gonna have 4 hits wounding on 2s into a 4-up save. And so, you know, at best case scenario, you're with like 7, and then they make 3 out of 4, so you lose 4. So 2 squads to kill 1 unit of scouts. That's a lot of points. That's 250 points for like a, you know, 1 unit of scouts.
That is our show this week. We didn't solve it. We don't know what we're taking at the ATC yet, but that's the kind of stuff that's on our minds.
I was going to tell you what Emperor's Children do.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right, yeah, yeah.
Hurt your soul.
Yeah.
They are so quick. They are so ferociously quick. Faster than I thought they were, and doing more damage than I thought they would. Like, on face value, I thought they would have problems.
Maybe, like, all their swords actually.
Yeah, they're just hitting you with chainswords, right? They're just hitting you with chainswords at, like, a lot of attacks, but medium strength, low to medium AP. I'm like, I worry they're going to bounce off things. Turns out, like, Noise Marines are just like probably the best anti-infantry, one of the best anti-infantry killing units in the game, which, you know, wasn't too hard a stretch of the imagination to consider. And then the rest of the army is just really, really well put together. It's just a very strong trading army that at any point can go from 0 to 100. Who remembers Kraken Gene Stealers in 8th edition?
Mm-hmm. Still have nightmares.
Yeah, that's the noise, Netanya. That's it. That's right. That's it right there. That's what they feel like somewhat. Like, they'll just stage up, and wait for 2 cards to come out that give them, like, max points for sending on you, and then here's 2,000 points. Just handle it all.
I can't wait. I know people are big fans of that faction. I cannot wait to see what they put up with. Maybe we talk about some lists next week. But that is our show. It's been a pleasure hanging out with y'all, talking Warhammer. Please don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. Leave us those 5-star reviews. Maybe pick up a FTN t-shirt. They're awesome. We'll see y'all next week, everybody. Have a great night.
There he is.
Bye, everybody.
The Sept Tenets demand you tune in next week for the greater good, of course.